In June of 1894, a man with the very long name of Edward Albert Christian George Andrew Patrick David was born. Edward, or David as he was known to his family and friends, had every possible advantage. He was born into a good family, some would say the best family. He was educated at Oxford, wealthy, with a quick wit and good taste. During the First World War, he earned the Military Cross for gallantry. His rank, travels, good looks, single status gained him much attention. At the height of his popularity, he was the most photographed man of his day, and he set the standard for men's fashion. He is responsible, for instance, for the fact that to this very day, men traditionally do not fasten the bottom button of their blazer. But there was a dark side to David. He had a series of affairs with married women. He made nasty racial slurs publicly. He shirked family duty in favor of debauched parties. When he did show up at public functions, he was often surly and rude. He made sure that everyone around him knew that he didn't care to be there. And he took great delight in belittling people who did not have the advantages that he did. In time, David took up with a woman, a married woman, who was manifestly unsuitable. His well-heeled parents and siblings hated her, her upbringing, her morals, her manipulative ways, her series of affairs with married men, including the son of the dictator Mussolini. But David loved her, became slavishly dependent upon her, and showered her with money and jewels. You've probably guessed who David is. He was, in fact, Edward, Prince of Wales, who was to become, for 325 days at least, His Majesty Edward VIII, by the grace of God, of Great Britain, Ireland, the British realms beyond the seas, defender of the faith, and Emperor of India. And the woman, of course, was Mrs. Wallace Simpson, formerly Mrs. Wallace Spencer, formerly Miss Wallace Warfield of Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania. Now, there are two ways that people see the legacy of Edward VIII. Some have sought to romanticize him, to see a man so in love with a woman that he gave up his crown to follow his heart. Soft camera lens, dreamy music. But there's another way of looking at the whole matter, and I know I'm going to offend some people by saying this, but that's what I do. At least one biographer thinks that it was not so much Wallace that Edward loved, but he loved what Wallace could do for him, how she could make him feel, how she could be codependent in his self-centered worldview. At his root, Edward was a person who was self-interested and self-absorbed. As his mother, Queen Mary, said, to give up all this for that. A Now, where is the priest going with all this? Well, we have in the gospel today our Lord's teaching about duty. He tells them a little story. Will any of you who has a servant plowing or keeping sheep say when he's come in from the field, come at once and sit down at table? Would you not rather say to him, prepare supper for me, gird yourself, serve me, eat till I eat and drink, and afterward you shall eat and drink? I mean, what are we to do with a parable that characterizes our response to Jesus in terms of duty? Duty, it's an ugly little word. It's cousin to ugly other ugly little words like dull and drudgery and discipline. And it sounds so Victorian. Do your duty. When was the last time you heard someone say that? I mean, the last time I heard it was my Boy Scout promise, which began, on my honor, I promise to do my duty to God and the Queen. That's the last time I used the word duty. And this is a tough little story that Jesus gives us. It's patently unfair. This poor guy, this servant, surely deserves some consideration, a few rewards, a little bit of affirmation. But no, he is an unworthy servant who has done his duty. What is duty? Duty is that which we are morally obligated to do as opposed to what we want to do. Aristotle thought that duty was the supreme virtue because duty meant being true to oneself, and being true to oneself makes you happy. Immanuel Kant said that there's a universal imperative to duty, both for our own happiness and for those of our neighbor. But that's not what our Lord means by duty. Duty arises for the Christian not from self-interest, not even out of interest for our neighbor, but because of the relationship between servant and master. When we say we are unworthy servants, we've only done what was our duty, we're not pretending at humility. Rather, we're acknowledging that we are in service to the master. True humility comes to those who find themselves, their lives, their projects, their causes, caught up in something greater than themselves. Being a servant is about being in love with the master. And being in love with him, we want to serve him and his people. Now, the New Testament speaks of Christian leaders as diakonoi, butler, waiter, servant. The English word deacon comes from that. And we do that in imitation of the one who stooped with basin and towel, the one who came not to be served, but rather to serve, and the one who showed his true lordship by waiting at table. And how this flies in the way, in the face of modern thinking. We, like Edward, have a mindset that says we should do something not because we ought to do it, duty, but because we want to do it. And only children make decisions based on whether they want to do something. Adults use the word ought and should. Regardless of whether I feel like doing it, it's the right thing to do, so I ought to do it. Perhaps that's why Edward's tutor remarked that for some hereditary or psychological reason, normal mental development stopped dead when he reached adolescence. Now, sociologists have noted that as recently as the 1950s, people bought into a compact of self-sacrifice. The rules were hard work and suppression of self-fulfillment in order to meet the needs of others. But in the 1960s and the 1970s, the old self-denial ethic was replaced with an ethic of self-fulfillment. Self-restraint gave way to do your own thing. And the problem with this, with being true to me, is that in journeying deeper into ourselves, we have not grown, but shrunk. The irony is that you don't fulfill your needs by concerning yourself with your needs. Most of our needs, in fact, turn out to be desires. And of course, desires are infinite. And that compounds itself because we come to think of ourselves as failures because we cannot possibly fill all of our desires, and we set ourselves up for a lifetime of disappointment. Nothing seems to subvert self-fulfillment more than self-indulgence. And if you know anything about the later years of Edward and Wallace, you know that to be true. They are a poster child for this. A cafe society flirtation with fascism. A disastrous tenure as governor of the Bahamas, which he called a third-class British colony, endless vacuous conversations, and much doting on their pug dogs. Oh, and Edward wrote a book on royal fashion since Queen Victoria. I mean, all very sad. A waste of a life. What Jesus is telling us in this parable is that there is a great deal of duty to the Christian life. A great writer was talking about her work. How do you get into the mood to write? Someone asked. Mood? Mood? I have breakfast, I sit down in front of my computer, and then I write. I'm a writer. That's what I do, I write. As Christians, we too have our work. We are servants. We do our duty. Now, whatever moral victory you and I might claim in this life is so transitory. Day-to-day discipleship is contingent on so many things over which we have no control. So your goodness, your relationship to God, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with your family and friends and neighbor has got to rest on something more profound than fleeting feeling. What you need, what I need, is something to keep me faithful even if I don't feel like it, even when I don't want to be caring or just or truthful. Even when I don't feel like girding myself and waiting table for the master. Even when I don't feel affirmed after a long day of plowing and tending sheep. We have to look elsewhere. I need to stop with the last story. In my last parish, I had a young man who fit the bill of what we commonly call a sacristy rat. Someone who sort of hangs around church and clergy. In his case, not only my parish, but other parishes as well. And I mean that as a term of endearment. Most sacristy rats go on to be very good priests. Now, I enjoyed his company. He was always there when something needed to be done. But I asked him once, I said, Grant, why do you spend so much time hanging around priests? Because, he said, It is great to be with people who are dealing with something so much more important than they are. They get consumed by the work because it is such great work. Now, he may have been a little bit over-idealistic, but the point is true. If you want to be fulfilled, if you want to find happiness, the best way is to give your life over to something that is worthy of doing for the one who is worthy, who is Jesus. Worthy is the Lamb that was slain, says St. John, to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing. Jesus is worthy. He is our master. We unworthy as we are his servants. And God being our helper, we will do our duty. That is our ultimate affirmation. One day we will hear the words of Jesus. No longer do I call you servants, but I call you friends. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. Let us stand in the words of the Nicene Creed. Affirm the faith that comes down to us. We believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, maker of heaven and earth.